the spiritual formation for moms, it's just on my mind constantly these days. I know I would have experienced more joy and peace through the years of homeschooling if I had known more about my spiritual formation. And so I really do want to encourage moms, especially homeschooling moms, because I think we're a unique bunch in that we are with our kids 24/7 for years on end, usually. It's not a season. It's your life, your adult life.
Welcome to Homeschool Conversations with Humility and Doxology, a series of interviews with real-life homeschool moms, dads, and other educators on all sorts of topics that affect our lives as homeschool parents. I'm Amy Sloan, a second-generation homeschool mom of five, and I am so delighted that you are here. Here on Homeschool Conversations, we'll discuss educational philosophy, family life, and more. Come chat with us.
Hello, friends. Today, I am joined by Lisa Heidia. She has been married to Joey for 41 years, and they have 10 kids, ranging in age from 16 to 36, plus 11 delightful grandkids. This is Lisa's 32nd year of Charlotte Mason homeschooling. Her educational background is in veterinary science and education, and currently, Lisa is completing a second master's degree in spiritual formation. She enjoys lots of different handicrafts, especially embroidery and crochet, participating in her local community theater with kids and grandkids, and she even hosts a Shakespeare camp, hiking, especially in the Rocky Mountains, traveling, especially to England, reading in her hammock, especially Dorothy Sayers, C.S. Lewis, and Terry Pratchett, walking along their gravel road and jazzercising to super dancey songs. So I love just the breadth there. Kind of gives us a picture of who you are. But just here at the beginning, tell us a little bit about yourself and your family and how you guys got started homeschooling.
Sure. Well, as you said, I've been married to Joey for 41 years. And we live in the middle of Nebraska on about 14 acres in a house we built. So it's perfect for our large family and now our extended family gatherings that we have every single week on Saturday night. All the grandkids come and their parents. We also like to see their parents. And we have a lot of animals. We have chickens, ducks, and everything, because as you mentioned, our background is in veterinary science. So we have a lot of animals. So, and I do love all the things that you mentioned in the introduction. I have a lot of interests, and I'm just grateful to be able to participate in all those things that I participate in. Our kids range in age from 16 to 36, and so I only have one at home right now. And six of those kids joined our family by birth and four by adoption. And three of our adopted kids have special medical needs, pretty involved special medical needs and physical disabilities, and two of them have intellectual disabilities and mental health challenges. So that's part of our life and our, you know, part of our homeschooling life. I did get started in homeschooling in 1992. I read Charlotte Mason's Toward a Philosophy of Education, and I wrote a paper on it when I was actually working on my doctorate in education at that time. And I was just sold when I read it. And we started homeschooling. I had three kids at the time, and we started homeschooling with Charlotte Mason from the beginning. So that's how I got started.
Well, that is fascinating to me, because I think that there are very few people who have that privilege of kind of catching a glimpse, getting this idea of education right at the beginning, and then being able to kind of grow and deepen over the years instead of making, you know, lots of different changes over time. So how have you seen the way your initial thoughts that came from just this research paper you were writing How have your kind of thoughts about education, your approach to homeschooling, maybe deepened or grown or changed in those intervening years?
I have stuck with Charlotte Mason. So I'm grateful for that, that foundation was really a good match for our family. I was rather isolated in my practice. I tried for a lot of years to get other moms on board with what Charlotte Mason, you know, talks about in her philosophy. And I don't know, I wasn't persuasive enough. So it was just basically me doing my Charlotte Mason thing with our family for a really long time. And so I didn't meet any other Charlotte Mason homeschoolers till really just a few years ago. And I was so delighted. And now I am so enriched and encouraged by participating conferences and retreats with other homeschoolers. I actually told Karen Glass this summer when we were at the Charlotte Mason Institute Centenary Conference in Ambleside that I felt like I missed the Ambleside Online boat because those moms are all my era. And I would have loved to have contributed to that. But I was just kind of here in the middle of Nebraska doing my Charlotte Mason thing. So I think my growth in Charlotte Mason has really, in some ways it was good that I wasn't super influenced by a lot of other interpretations of Charlotte Mason for so long. But now I'm just really appreciate some of the other resources, you know, and just the encouragement to keep on keeping on with Charlotte Mason. So I guess that's how it's kind of changed over the years.
It's the benefit of all the resources we have online, podcasts, you know, blogs, social media, things like that. It's such a benefit because even if we are geographically separated from others who follow a similar approach to our home, you know, to homeschool education, we can still learn and grow and find that community over the distance. But kind of the flip side of that, like you were mentioning, is sometimes you can also be influenced unduly by your peers instead of by those who have more experience or by some of the original sources themselves. So it's kind of a two-edged sword, I guess, a bit there. Yeah. It's a blessing. Obviously, I'm a part of that and I'm very thankful for that. But we have to always keep in mind a little bit of that perspective and who we're listening to and where we're getting our advice from.
Yeah. And I do think overall it was good for our family that I just kind of was, you know, going with my original Charlotte Mason exposure and not a whole lot of additional input. But again, like I said, now there's so many fun resources and I'm an extrovert and I just love getting together with other homeschooling Charlotte Mason moms, especially that the conferences and retreats that I get to go to are just so fun. So
such a joy. Yeah. As an extrovert, that's why I do a podcast is because I just want to talk to cool people.
I mean, same. I don't do a podcast, but yeah, I just want to talk to people and especially about homeschooling. It's super fun. So,
well, you have these many years of experience with different kinds of students, different challenges and strengths. What have been some of your favorite parts of homeschooling?
Relationships are very important to me. And that was one of my main reasons for wanting to homeschool. And I wanted to build a family culture. And I think that's what really drew me to Charlotte Mason, because just that reading of good living books together on a regular basis was such a draw. And we developed by doing that year in and year out, reading together. We developed a family culture and we have jokes. I know sometimes I see on your Instagram, you have the exact same thing happen in your family. You're like, oh, you're just throwing out jokes because you've read the same Shakespeare or you've read the same Dickens or what, you know, you're just you have this common foundation. So that's what I loved about that. I love relationship building. I really love playing music together with the kids. It gave us time. We had for a while, we had a family strings group. We played at weddings and stuff like that. And that gave us time. Homeschooling gave us time to do that together, to practice. And I love building a home library. That was a joy. I love that the older kids got to know the younger kids in a way they wouldn't have if they had been going off somewhere every day, and vice versa. I know when my fourth child was born, we got home from the hospital the day my second oldest daughter would have started kindergarten. And I thought, wow, I'm so glad that she's right here, you know? And so that the older kids got to know the younger kids was important to me. Obviously, this is all like relationship-based things, but these are the things I really loved about homeschooling. And I love spending time with my kids then and now, you know, and I love watching them have close relationships now. It's just the best. So yeah. Those are my favorite parts, the relationship parts.
Yeah, I think probably about every morning during our morning time when I open us in prayer. And sometimes I think, I don't mean this to sound like vain repetition, but I feel like every morning I'm like, Lord, thank you so much that we get to learn together and be together, because it really is something that's such a joy. And it can be a hard part of homeschooling too, but it really is such a good, beautiful part.
It really is. I'm just thinking about, you know, I mentioned that I went to the Charlotte Mason Institute's Centenary Conference in Ambleside this last summer, and I went with my two oldest daughters who homeschool their kids. And the way that we were just so delighted and together is squeeing about literary locations. Like, we went to Beatrix Potter's house, and we were just like, oh my goodness, this is the floorboard that's in the book, you know, together. And we were just, yeah. So it just continues. It is established in our homeschooling, and then it just continues. Yeah.
That is beautiful. I have new goals. Okay. Literary trip to England with my girls.
Yes. Oh yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, on the flip side, sometimes things aren't so wonderful and beautiful in the moment. So what have been some of the challenges that you've faced homeschooling, and how have you sought to overcome those?
I really do think with a larger family, it's hard to homeschool with toddlers. It's not so hard to homeschool with babies, I don't think, because you can kind of know where they are at all times, but homeschoolers can just... toddlers can just, you know, take a bookshelf down in 2 seconds if you're not watching them. So I do think that that really is a real challenge for people who have, you know, larger families, because I think there's sometimes a little bit of guilt, feeling like you're not serving the older ones in a way you might want to if you're having to supervise the toddler. And I mean, that's just a real challenge. So there's different ways we met that challenge, but I think that's really different for every family. And it really changed, you know, as the years went by and I had way more older kids when I had a toddler and that kind of thing. So that's a challenge. To me, that's a challenge, the range of ages at times. So I don't have like one specific way I met that challenge, because the dynamics changed, but I do think that that's a big challenge. I think it's also was challenging for us to homeschool kids with really special learning needs. And that's the point where, well, I do love that I can meet each child where he or she is. So there's no shame in being where you are. You just are where you are, and meet them in their pace. And I super love that. And at the same time, those needs required in our family outside support. And so like occupational therapy and speech therapy. And I think that's a challenge, because you have to fit that into your day and your week and your years, you know. And the good side about it is, referencing my extroversion, I've become friends with a whole bunch of therapists. So I have a lot of good friends who are therapists now. So, but that's challenging. And I mean, yeah. And when you have kids with a wide variety of like intellectual abilities, that can be challenging too. But I would say that this is where Charlotte Mason's focus on good and living books, they meet all the kids wherever they are at all times. So that's a good aspect of Charlotte Mason's, you know, kind of daily philosophy. So and you're going through this right now, but I do think one of the biggest challenges in homeschooling is homeschooling through extreme life challenges. You know, it's if you live for any length of time, you're going to have those. So, you know, it's tough, like financial issues or health issues, even the adjustment of having a new baby or a new baby with needs, special needs, or, I mean, there's just a huge variety of difficult life challenges. And I think the way that we met those was by not putting extra stress on ourselves to have unrealistic expectations or schedules. And homeschooling allows for that. And I would say that I think my adult kids would agree that we allowed homeschooling to be a part of the ebb and flow of life circumstances to a degree that was helpful to their growth and our growth as a family. So yeah, those are three challenges I can do.
What if I told you that there was a way to incorporate freedom into your homeschool planning? A way to blend flexibility and a well-ordered day. Homeschool planning doesn't have to be scary. I have created a free homeschool planning guide to help you ask the right big picture questions to set your long-term homeschool goals, and it will also give you 7 simple steps to craft a peaceful, orderly homeschool plan. If you want access to this free ebook, just head to humilityanddoxology.com/homeschool-planning-guide, or just click the link in the show notes.
No, that's really good to hear. And I think with all of those, you know, wide age range, going through challenges, learning difficulties, things like this, there can be this idea, someone might think, well, maybe if I just weren't homeschooling, like it would be easier, right? Maybe that's the solution, is I just don't homeschool and it'll fix the problem. But a lot of times it's homeschooling that actually simplifies in one sense and clarifies even in the midst of those challenges. Because, you know, going through a medical crisis, for instance, I was thinking about that. What a joy it is on the days when I am home that we can kind of really prioritize, okay, being together, meeting those emotional needs that are going on in the midst of a crisis situation. We can kind of focus a lot on one thing today because I may be at the hospital tomorrow, those kinds of things. Whereas if there was sort of this, everything was outside, it would be even harder, that much harder to have that family time, that emotional connection that is even more important than ever right now. Or, you know, with a wide age range, it can get hairy, especially if you have one of those crazy toddlers that you take your eyes off them for a minute and they're playing in the toilet or, you know, destroying something in the living room. But at the same time, you have that opportunity to develop those relationships, like you were mentioning earlier, where across a wide age range, kids who would never really be together in the same school, they'd see each other on the weekends, maybe, you know, but they wouldn't ever really have that time together. So it's kind of, I think with a lot of things in homeschooling, it's like the challenge is sometimes also the blessing, and the blessing is sometimes the challenge.
Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah. There's that flip side of the coin. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I am so excited to talk with you about this next question and idea topic, because it's something that is very close to my heart. You know, we talk about the idea, and it's Charlotte Mason educators, and we'll talk about the idea that children are born persons. Even if you're not a Charlotte Mason educator, a Christian educator knows that children are image bearers of God, right? They're born persons. So we know there's not a guarantee they're going to turn out a certain way, even if just because we're homeschooling, right? I talk about it, homeschooling isn't a vending machine. You don't just push the buttons and out pops this kid. And yet we also know that homeschooling does matter and it's a worthwhile pursuit. So we know we can't save our children with homeschooling or Christian parenting, but at the same time, we know what we're doing does matter, right? And so sometimes it can be hard to hold both of those ideas at the same time and say, okay, well, what does that mean? What does that look like as we think about the big picture of our homeschooling journey? And then actually today, this morning with my kids in my living room. So can you kind of explore those ideas a little bit?
I am so grateful for your voice on this topic because it's so important and there is such a tension. I mean, there is such a tension in these positions. And in general, I think we humans prefer certainty over the discomfort of tension. So I'm really grateful that you've created conversations around this topic, because I do think that there's a pervasive, and whether it's like subtle or blatant, I do think there's a pervasive message in the Christian homeschooling community that if we homeschool, then we will have kids who are not only Christian, but also act a certain way. And I've heard people choose homeschooling just specifically for that reason. Like, I want my kids to act and be a certain way. And I know I definitely received that message, whether, you know, subtly or blatantly, especially in the early materials in the early 90s that were out for, you know, I know you're a second generation homeschooler, so I don't know how much of that your mom, you know, received too, but it really was a lot of homeschool so that your kids will turn out a certain way. So, and I mean, if we're Christians and we know the joy of relationship with Jesus, obviously we want our kids to have that too. So, you know, it's not a bad desire, you know, to want those things. But, and even Charlotte Mason, I think kind of adds a little, can add a little bit to this. She said, and I have a quote here. Let's see. She said, only if I can see her. Yeah. She said in Home Education on page 97, she says, how habit in the hands of the mother is as his wheel to the potter, his knife to the carver, the instrument by means of which she turns out the design she has already conceived in her brain. Well, I totally agree that with Charlotte Mason about the power of habit. I totally agree with her, but I could see how her describing it that way could reinforce the idea that a mom does have the power to turn out the design she has already conceived in her brain concerning how her children will act or be. And I don't know that that's necessarily what Charlotte Mason means by that, but I could see how someone could interpret it that way. Like, oh, maybe me, you know what I mean? So like we live in this tension of being inspired to homeschool and understanding the general trends of human behavior and education. And yet we have no guarantee that the efforts are going to yield a certain result, because children are, as you mentioned, born persons. That's one of Charlotte Mason's, you know, principle number one. So I do think it's valuable to recognize the tension when we think about the big picture for the homeschool journey. And our pastors are preaching through Exodus right now. And a couple of weeks ago, one of them pointed out that God tells Moses to go tell Pharaoh what to do. And God also tells Moses that Pharaoh is not going to do it. So even though Pharaoh wasn't going to do what Moses said, Moses still had to go tell him what to do. And I really like related to that as a homeschooling mom, because I was like, I have no guaranteed outcome, but that's not a justification for not homeschooling when I have been inspired that homeschooling is the best fit for my family. So I was like, yeah, I relate to you, Moses. No guarantee, but I'm still going to do it, you know? So that, then we're back around to the tension of being responsible to someone. So responsible to do the homeschooling without being responsible for them. And in my graduate school program right now, this on spiritual formation, our instructor beautifully presented the distinction between being responsible to someone and for someone. And those distinctions apply to me in my role as a homeschooling mom, because I believe that I'm responsible to be faithful with the gifts that God has given me and to serve the people that God has called me to serve and to hone my skills as a home educator and to focus my attention on my work, to be present, and to partner with God in all of it. And I'm not responsible for my children's impulsive or unhealthy or sinful behaviors, attitudes, anxieties, ideas, feelings, thoughts, you know, or actions, because I do not have the power to change them. I don't. And that is really a difficult fact to accept as a mom, that you do not have the power to change that person that you're actually in charge of. So in my responsibility to my children, I can establish, you know, circumstances and expectations for certain behavior, of course. But we all know, because we ourselves are persons, that no one has the power to change another person. You know that in yourself, that another person doesn't have the power to change me. Only God has the power to change me. And so where I've struggled in the past, and my instructor also had a really, really beautiful way of saying this. Let me see if I can find her exact quote on this. She says, and this is where I struggled, in succumbing to the temptation to connect or attach my inner confidence and joy to the overall success or failure or flourishing or growth or stagnation of my children. And I thought, that's it, because it's not that we don't set up circumstances and have expectations for, you know, about our children's behavior. But when I succumb to the temptation to connect or attach my inner confidence and my inner joy to the overall success or failure or flourishing or growth of my children, then that's a crushing burden. That's the distinction. My joy cannot depend upon how my children respond to what I set up for them, you know, what my expectations of their. So the question I ask myself better is, can I confidently and joyfully step back and trust that God is going to do something in the lives of my children, that he is working in the lives of my children? And I think that's a constant question that I ask myself, you know, can I trust that God is working in them, like he isn't working in me? And I do think there were times when I wanted a specific outcome as evidence of all the hard work I put in, because homeschooling is hard. And it's, you know, if you're a carpenter and you're building a table, you've got the table to show. And I think I wanted something to show for my effort, because it's a lot of effort. But, and then, you know, there were times when I experienced a lot of disappointment and frustration, guilt and resentment, because I don't have a product, because their children aren't products. And that I recognized that was really more about my pride than anything else. So I think when we're talking about day-to-day nitty-gritty, that's a lot of theory, but I do think the most valuable practice for me is to keep an internal perspective as I do my work. And that is taking time to attend to my own spiritual growth and formation, and not solely focusing on the outcomes that involve my kids.
That is so good. So encouraging. I almost wish I could like pause and rewind and listen to what you said again, but I guess I'll just wait until this publishes. But it was so important because we can put our identity, our sense of joy, peace, all of those things into our children. And it's a good thing what we're wanting. Like you were saying, of course, it's a good thing to want them to love the Lord. It's a good thing for us to want them to live a happy, productive, you know, hardworking life. All of these things are good things to desire. But when that good thing, and I can't remember who said that, but someone, I remember hearing a teacher say that when a good thing becomes an idol, you know, because when you don't get it, your emotions are all agitated. So you get angry or upset because you didn't get it. And that kind of shows you that it had actually superseded God in your mind. That good thing, those good desires always have to be below our desire to honor and love and trust the Lord, right? Not what we can get out of him, not this result, but just we answer to him. You know, and that it has to be where our peace comes from, because otherwise our emotions will just go all over the place. You have a really good day. All the kids get along. You check off all the school subjects, you know, the kitchen's relatively clean. Maybe you even did a little laundry and you're like, I'm doing great. This is wonderful. And then the next day, you know, the toddler has a poopy diaper in the middle of the living room and nobody gets along and everything's going haywire. And you're like, I'm a failure. Everything's terrible. And you just can't live your life like that, back and forth, depending on the circumstances. Your identity has to be outside of yourself, something a lot more stable than your children.
Exactly, exactly. That's it on the nose. So.
I know a bank where a writer goes, where octopus and nine violet grows.
Oh my heart. That little clip is of my youngest daughter when she was just 2 years old, and she was lisping her way along with our family's Shakespeare memory, the very same Shakespeare that I was memorizing with the rest of the kids in morning time. Can you really introduce your kids to Shakespeare? Can you easily include Shakespeare's works in your homeschool curriculum? Shakespeare for kids? Surely that is a crazy idea. But let me reassure you, exploring Shakespeare with your children can be fun and easy. And if you don't believe me, I challenge you to watch my free Getting Started with Shakespeare workshop, where you can explore some of the resources I rounded up, learn my 3 quick tips for getting started with Shakespeare, and then you'll be on your way to exploring Shakespeare's masterpieces with your kids of all ages. You can head to humilityanddoxology.com/exploring-shakespeare-children, or just check the link in the show notes for more details. Well, you mentioned there at the end about how you focused on your own spiritual formation and how that kind of has brought clarity to this idea that we're talking about. And I know you've talked about how important you think it is for homeschooling moms to have some intentionality about their own spiritual growth. Yes. So, you know, why is this important? I think we've already sort of started to talk about it, but why is this important? And then how can a Christian homeschool mom prioritize her own Christian spiritual formation, her relationship with the Lord, in the midst of what can be sleeplessness, you know, poopy diapers, all of the mess that is the mom, especially the homeschool mom life?
Yes. The spiritual formation for moms and any full-time caregiver, it's just on my mind constantly these days. Because I would have experienced more joy and peace through the years of homeschooling if I had known more about my spiritual formation. And so I really do want to encourage moms, especially homeschooling moms, because I think we're a unique bunch in that we are with our kids 24/7 for years on end. Usually it's not a season. It's your life, your adult life. You know, if you homeschool for decades, that's your adult life. So it's not being fully with your kids all the time is not a like a toddler season, like some people might experience. So I wasn't especially familiar with the specific term spiritual formation until relatively recently. I think I was more familiar with like the term sanctification. But I like the author Dallas Willard's take on it. He says, let's see if I have another quote. He says, if I can find it. He says, everyone gets a spiritual formation. The question is what kind? And so we are being formed. Our spirit is being formed. What is it being formed into? And another one of my instructors in my graduate program, she clarifies the concept of spiritual formation by asking, are we being formed toward peace, wholeness, and Christ-likeness, or are we being formed around something else? So we as Christians are formed into Christ-likeness as we engage with Jesus. You know, I mean, as we interact with him, watch what he does in the word and be in his presence. And some of the ways that, time-tested ways of engaging with Jesus is through the spiritual disciplines of like prayer. You know, very common, people know these: fasting, worship, silence and solitude. And so I was personally really encouraged by in my spiritual growth through silence and solitude. And to me, silence and solitude is a different practice than like quiet time, because I practice quiet time all of my adult life, which basically was more like studying scripture and prayer. Silence and solitude for me are involve meditating on a short passage of scripture, then praying, and then sitting quietly in God's presence. Different than studying and, you know, so, and it's the sitting quietly in God's presence part that was different for me than doing quiet time before. And there are a whole lot of resources that explain silence and solitude, because it's an ancient Christian practice. But I don't think I've ever run across one yet that really talks about it from the point of view of a mom, you know. And our church is studying together. We're reading together Dietrich Bonhoeffer's Life Together. And we were discussing the chapter on the day alone. And the moms in our group were literally laughing out loud when he started talking about silence and solitude. And it kind of makes me pause and think, ask myself, and I literally asked the moms as we were in this group talking, what narrative are we accepting that we think it's impossible to expect to practice silence and solitude as a mom, and especially as a mom of young kids? Because we must be, I know I must have somehow picked up a narrative that is not, those are not practices that I can expect to experience, you know, as a mom of young kids or someone that I'm in charge of all the time. And so I started examining my own attitudes and I don't know, expectations that were surrounding silence and solitude. And because within my graduate program I'm now in, during the residency period that we have a week-long residency period each semester, and I had the opportunity to really experience silence and solitude because I was, you know, there by myself. And I benefited so much from that. I experienced so much strengthening, so much peace, so much joy in these practices. And now I have only one teenager at home. So my day is not interrupted. I mean, I can go practice silence and solitude every day without an issue. But what I keep thinking about is how much more equipped to homeschool joyfully and peacefully I would have been if I had started those practices much earlier. And I know I could have asked Joey, I know I could have said, hey, Joey, during this time of the day, every, you know, whether it's every day or whatever, we would have worked something out to enable me to have whatever 20 minutes of silence and solitude. I didn't even consider the possibility because somehow I had accepted a narrative that that wasn't an option for me as a mom of a bunch of kids. So I'm really hoping to encourage moms to ask God to show them how they can incorporate the practices of silence and solitude specifically into their lives. You know, and talk to your family about that, like how that could work in your daily routine, because I find it those practices so like exponentially encouraging and strengthening and equipping that it's worthwhile to try to see how you can incorporate those. So and I do have a resource I brought to show that I think if you're having a, you know, you're like, where do I kind of start with this? This is a book that really, this is Jan Johnson's Savoring God's Word. If you needed something to start, if someone needed something to start with, I think she might have a PDF for free online. But anyway.
I think that's such a valuable reminder, especially when you're a mom with a bunch of little kids and there's all the jokes, right? Where you go into the bathroom and you can't even go to the bathroom by yourself or shower or all these things. And so I think sometimes we have in our head that if we don't have these huge chunks of time, then it doesn't count. Like, I don't have a huge chunk of time to read the Bible or to study the Bible, so it doesn't count. I don't have this huge chunk of time to pray, so it doesn't count. I don't have a huge chunk of silence time, like you were describing, so it doesn't count. But when you think about how essential it is for us to continue to grow in our relationship with the Lord, to find ways to prioritize it, and also to I guess, see those small moments where we have, right? That it's not all or nothing, to see those small moments as the opportunities they are. And I know for myself, when it comes to silence or even prayer, it's very easy now for me to always have input going on, which I love as an extrovert. I love having constant input. So I barely ever am in silence, even though my kids are older, because I'm like listening to a podcast or music or talking to a friend or something like that. And so even just prioritizing a time to like, I'm going to go take a walk and not listen to anything, that's actually very hard for me, but that can be a really good opportunity to be silent before the Lord, to pray, to meditate on his word, those things. So even that, you know, sometimes it might just be, what do you not turn on in that moment while you're washing dishes? You know, you're not having to like be in a special fancy place for an hour and a half for it to count. But maybe this 100%. Time wash the dishes without music and just pray.
And I'm so glad you mentioned walking, because walking is a super, super great opportunity for solitude and silence. So yeah, and sometimes that feels like maybe easier to incorporate in your day. You know, like I'm going for a walk now, and you know, whoever's in charge of the people who need to have supervision knows you're just going for a walk, you know, and like you said, don't plug in, but use that time. Yeah.
Yeah. That is a really good encouragement. Thank you, Lisa. This has been such a great conversation. I'm really excited to get to share this with everyone this season. But before you go, I've got to ask you the questions that I ask all of my guests. And the first is just, what are you personally reading lately? I have a feeling there's probably a lot of fascinating books.
Yes, I am reading a lot of books for my graduate program. Lots and lots of books, which is great. And I'm also obviously reading a lot of books with my daughter in morning time. But what I'm reading for my personal reading right now is I'm reading Karen Swallow Pryor's The Evangelical Imagination, which is really interesting. My novel I'm reading right now is Elmer Gantry by Sinclair Lewis. And I am reading a Margaret Coombs biography of Charlotte Mason, which is just, it's very interesting. She has researched some additional information, and it's helpful and interesting to get a bigger picture of Charlotte Mason. And then I'm also reading Adam Grant's Hidden Potential for another book club. So, yeah.
Oh, those all sound great. Well, Lisa, what would be your best tip for helping the homeschool day run more smoothly?
For me personally, the best tip that has carried me through 32 years of homeschooling is to have a routine of the day, but not a strict time schedule. So, we know what's going next and next and next and next, but we don't have a strict time schedule. And for the mom to start the day with silence and solitude, if at all possible.
So, oh, that is great. Lisa, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your perspective with us today. If people wanted to connect with you online, what is the best way for them to do that?
I would love that. I love to connect. My older two daughters and I have a homeschooling Instagram account that is generational homeschooling. So just all generational homeschooling, one big word. Mostly what I put on there are my walks every morning my accountability. Look what pretty thing I saw today outside. And also Joey and I wrote a series of high school science books. So you can find us there and connect with us there at friendlysciences.com. That's kind of our landing place. And I also just started another Instagram account. So we'll see what I can get going on this, but it's going to kind of be a landing place for all of my, things I'm thinking about spiritual formation for moms. And it's called Spiritual Formation _Moms. So we'll see what I would love to share kind of some ongoing, ideas about how we can, as moms, give some attention to our spiritual formation. So especially as homeschooling moms. So
that is awesome. I will have all those links over in the show notes for this episode at humilityanddoxology.com. And I hope people go and connect with you over on Instagram and those places. And for those who are listening, if this conversation was encouraging, I would love for you to tell a friend. Word of mouth is still one of the best ways that podcasts are discovered. So tell a friend about this episode, send them the link, and leave a rating and review for Homeschool Conversations wherever you're listening. And I will chat with you again soon. Thanks for listening in on this week's Homeschool Conversation. For show notes and links to all the resources we discussed, head to humilityanddoxology.com/homeschool-conversations. And if these episodes are an encouragement to you, would you take a moment to leave a rating and review and to share with your friends? I am so thankful that you are here on this adventure with me. Let's repent of our constant striving, relish the joy of learning, and rest in the work of Christ on our behalf. Stand fast, my friends.